All right, we begin here on Ayin Chedem and Bed by the bottom by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mishnah tan reshut lishlucho the kadeshet bito. Someone appoints an agent to go ahead and accept kiddushin on behalf of his daughter. Balachu v'kadsha, and he went ahead and was mekadesh the girl. Im shelo kadmu, if his were first kiddushab kiddushin, then his kiddushin or kiddushim. Im shelo kadmu kiddushab kiddushin. If the shliachs went first, then his are the kiddushin. So in essence, it's whoever gets there first, they're the ones who establish the kiddushin, because the agent was empowered, the father is empowered, so whichever one generates the kiddushin first, that is who she is married to. Remeinu yodua, they don't know which one came first. Shneim notnim get, they both give a get. Ve'im ratzu, echad noten get, ve'echad kones. And if they so choose, then one of them can give a get, and one of them can marry her. Tosafot discusses why we don't give that as the primary solution. Let her marry one of these two. Why are we saying im ratzu, if they want to? Why don't we just say, let's do this? The answer might be because of the structurally what it looks like now, which is that according to many mefarshim, she will still have to accept kiddushin from the party that she decides to marry, because we're just not sure if he was the first or the second party. And then if she has, in essence, a divorce from both parties, it almost looks like he's machzir grushato. That looks like a case where he is taking back his grusha after she got married to someone else or had an engagement to someone else. So because of the optics, we don't necessarily mention this as the primary solution, but we offer it as a good solution. And then if she so chooses to marry this individual, then we allow her to. And the Mishnah says, don't worry about all those optics, and we allow it to go through. If one of them is a kohen, then she obviously can't marry him, because then she's now a grusha, and possibly really a grusha. If she wasn't married to him and she's married to the other guy, then she can't marry him. So if they're both kohanim, then this isn't the solution. If one of them is a kohen, then she only can marry the other person. She gave permission to her agent to accept kiddushin on her behalf. She went ahead and accepted kiddushin on her own behalf. If hers came first, kiddushin, kiddushin, then her kiddushin or kiddushim. Im shel shlucha kadmu, kiddushav kiddushin. If the agent's kiddushim or acceptance of the kiddushim were first, then she's married to whomever the agent accepted from. If they don't know who came first, then they both give her a get. Im ratzu echad noten la get ve'echad kones. One of them gives a get, one of them can marry her. Basically, you have two pieces of the Mishnah which are identical. Just in one case, it's a father and a shliach, and the second case, it's the daughter and the shliach. V'tzricha, both halves of the Mishnah. Why is that? If we only had the case by him, by the father, then mishum de gavra kimle biyuchasin. Because a father or men know about yuchasin. They're into this stuff, they know what to check out for. And everyone would assume that when the father goes ahead and exercises his right to marry off the daughter, that by definition, he is being mevatel, the shliach that he sent. Because he assumes that he got the best. He knows enough about yuchasin that if he gets someone who is good enough, then he's going to marry her and forget about the shliach. Now that could be from two perspectives. Forget about the shliach because I assume I got the best. Or even if the shliach got someone better, he's already gotten to the point where he got someone of a good enough quality that he says it doesn't really matter if the shliach gets something better because he may not get anything. I don't want to risk losing what's here. So you would have thought the hava meaning would be that by definition he is mevatel the agency. Aval itzita de lo kimla biyuchasin. On the other hand, the woman who is not so steeped in these issues, ema lo neave kiddushia kiddushin. Maybe her acceptance of kiddushin is only on the premise that the agent doesn't find anything. Maybe she would defer to the agent in that case, assuming that the agent got her something better. So therefore, when she goes ahead and accepts kiddushin, it's almost as if there's a built-in tenai that says, you know, if the other guy got something better, then I'm with him. But if nothing goes through, then I'm accepting this. V'yashmin and gabidida. If we only had the part of the Mishnah that speaks about her, mishum de'itada daiko minzaba. Because a woman checks out who she's marrying, meaning that she's the one who's going to have to live with this guy forever. And so she's a little more careful about him and checks him out, gets to know him better. Aval ihu. But maybe the father isn't as concerned. So it's a relative question. Maybe that doesn't mean that the woman is as careful, because, of course, like you said, she sent the shliach. But she's more careful than her father would be about this issue, because the father would just be happy to have his daughter married. And therefore, we would have thought maybe over there, the father does it almost all tonight. If the shliach gets someone, fine. If I get someone, fine. But that's it. He does not nullifying the agency of the shliach. And therefore, tzricha, we need both these cases to show you in both instances, if they acted, we assume their action by definition is mevatel, the agency that was established. And so therefore, when the father accepts kiddushin, he by definition is saying whatever the shliach does is meaningless at this point. And same thing with the woman. If she accepts kiddushin, she is nullifying the agency that she created. And therefore, they were first. The kiddushin go through, and it's not as if there's an embedded tnai that if the shliach comes back with someone, that goes first for the two reasons that we mentioned over here. So if you remember, this mishnah was brought up and back on Daf Nun Ted and Bet. There was Machlokish, Rabbi Yochanan, and Reish Lakish, what it takes to back out of agency. If you gave your word to the agent to go ahead and do it, what do you have to do in order to undermine that agency? So there is Machloket, Rabbi Yochanan, and Reish Lakish, as to whether Dibur is Motzi Midei Dibur, Choseret, you're allowed to back out, or Reish Lakish says, Eino Choseret, the case there, which is, so what happens if the woman does not go out and do the Kedushin herself? She simply says, I don't want the agent to be my agent anymore. Is that enough to retract the agency? And that's Machloket, Rabbi Yochanan, and Reish Lakish, whether just a pure statement can do it, or she has to actively accept the Kedushin, which is by definition undermines the agency. So that was the Machloka we saw between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which revolves around this Mishnah. The Gemara's question back in Nunted is not about when he does a Maisa, it's when they simply retract. Here in the Gemara, they're saying that maybe there's an embedded Tanai. That's exactly what the Gemara is suggesting over here, that maybe you would have thought that they're just being careful. If the Shliach doesn't come back with someone, then I got something in hand. The Gemara says no, that the fact that they did it means that they retract the agency. Alright, Itmar. So now we have a machloket amoraim. Kicha via bederech, v'kicha atzma be'ir. The father accepted kiddushin for her out somewhere he's traveling around, and she accepted it in the city. Varehi bogeret, and now she is of age. Rav amar harehi bogeret lefaneinu. Now that she's of age, she can make her own decisions, she's under her own auspices, and therefore the father's doing is meaningless. Shmuel amar, chashin and the kedushay shneem. Shmuel says, now we worry about the kedushin of both of them. Gemara is going to ask the question, when? Because if she is a bogeret, the father's actions are meaningless. If she's a ketana, her actions are meaningless. If she's a nara, then they are both empowered. And the truth is, it should be just like our mishnah, which is whoever came first should be determinant over here. So why are Rav and Shmuel arguing about it? You have to figure out what exactly the case is that makes them argue. So the Gemara says, Eimat, Ilema betoch shisha, within the 6 months. This is Rashi's girsan, the way Rashi learns the Gemara, which is that we know that between the time that she turns into a ne'ara to the time that she becomes a bulgaret is 6 months. So ne'ara is when she reaches puberty. That's when she begins to be a ne'ara. 6 months later, she becomes a bulgaret. Now Rashi says that you can accelerate that, that it's possible to have it be less than 6 months if she shows the simanim of bagrut. The Mishnah, the Braitot in Nida explained to us what are the simanim of physical maturation of the girl that make her into a bogeret. And Rashi indicates here that sometimes pa'amim shehim mimaheret libgor. Sometimes it's accelerated. I mean, it happens before the 6 month period, and that's what the Gemara is saying. Ilem v'toch shisha, that she had the simanei bagrut before the 6 months were up. That's the way Rashi learns it. You can look here in the Tosafot Tishanim, and he says that he doesn't think that's correct, because he thinks that the 6 months are a minimum and a maximum, meaning that before 6 months, there's no question about her being a bulgaret. And therefore, he says it's after the time period of 6 months, but they're looking backwards after that period and trying to figure it out. So Rashi believes that it happened within the 6 months. Other Rishonim don't agree. You can see that in Tosafot Rishonim, that you can't have it accelerate. It doesn't happen before 6 months. But if it happened within the 6 month period, why would Rav say that we have a bulgaret now? Just because she changed and became a bulgaret doesn't indicate anything about the past. Which is that, yes, now we checked her. She has the simanim. She is a bulgaret. But that doesn't mean half a day ago, she was a bulgaret. Because this woman, according to Rashi, had an accelerated maturation. But the chazaka is that women take 6 months for this to happen. So if all of a sudden we get information that she is now a bulgaret, we would not establish or assume that meant she was a Bulgaria prior to this point in time. We assume whatever we see now is now. And that's it. There's nothing to indicate that it should have happened before, or we should have thought that she was a Bulgaria before this point in time. Hashtahu the Bagra, because that's what happened right now. Again, Tosafot eliminates that from the Girsa, because the way Rashi sees it, it happened right now. Hashtahu the Bagra. According to the Tosafot Yishanim, we're already past that point, and we know that she's a Bulgaria now, and we're questioning backwards what happens. You can't say Hashtahu the Bagra, because she's already past the period of time when she should be a Bulgaret. So therefore, you wouldn't accept Rav's position that there's a chazaka. If we see that she's a Bulgaret now, there's a chazaka that she was a Bulgaret before now. Because before now, there's no reason to believe she's a Bulgaret. El achar shisha? If you say it was after the six-month window, then why would Shmuel worry about the father's kiddushin in that case? That the maximum span between the time of Narut to the time of Bagrut is 6 months. So after 6 months, there's no longer reason to believe that the father has any rights over here. If we check now and she's a Bulgaret, we would assume she was a Bulgaret from the time that she turned 6 months. Meaning that there's no reason to believe that it didn't happen in a timely way or a timely fashion, that she was already a Bulgaret from the time we crossed over the 6 month threshold. Sricha the Kaddish Bahau Yoma the Mashlim Shisha. This all happened on the 6 month day itself. This is the 6 month day. The reason for that is the 6 month day is important because there is no chazaka. The day that she hit 6 months after being a Na'ara, that's the day when she transitions from being a Na'ara to a Bogeret. So on that day, she doesn't have a chazaka of being a Na'ara because we know that that day she's going to switch over to being a Bogeret. She also doesn't have a chazaka of a Bogeret because until that point she was a Na'ara. So what setting it up that it's the day that the 6 months expire makes it that there's no existing chazaka. And that's what leads to machloki between Rav and Shmuel. Because in the case where it's less than 6 months, everybody agrees there's no chazaka. In the case that it's more than 6 months, the chazaka is that she is a Bulgaret. So we create the scenario in a case where it's exactly the day where the transition happens, which eliminates any chazaka from the picture. Rav Amar, hari Bulgaret lifaneinu. We check now, she's a Bulgaret. If she's a Bulgaret now, we can assume that in the morning she was also a Bulgaret. There's no reason to believe that she wasn't a Bulgaret before this point in time. This is the day that it's supposed to happen. So if we have the Bulgaret, we'll assume that it happened at the beginning of the day. Shmuel Amar, hashtahu the Aiti Simanim. Who says that? This is the day of transition. So now this is when it happened. When we checked her, that's the first time that the Simanim showed up. And therefore, Shmuel's Choshesh for the Kedushin of both of them. Tosafot over here asks, why are Rav and Shmuel arguing in a case where the father brought Kiddushin and then she brought Kiddushin? You could have just said it's a case where the father accepted Kiddushin and you'd have the same question. Are the father's Kiddushin meaningful or not meaningful? Why is her accepting Kiddushin relevant to the case over here? The only relevance is whether the father has a right or doesn't have a right, and that's independent of whether she accepted Kiddushin. So Tosafot says, because if she did not accept Kiddushin, she would have a chazok of a pnuya. And therefore, that chazok of epnuya, together with the safek, whether the father has a right here, because of the chezkat bagrut, then we would say that she's not married, and assume that the father's rights are not accepted over here. Whereas, once she accepts kiddushin, she has a chezkat nisua. The only question is, who she's married to. But she's taken away the chazok of being a pnuya, and that opens up the possibility that the father could be the one who married her off over here. So her kiddushin are important here, not in and of themselves, whether they preceded her or were after the father's kiddushin, but only to take away the chazaka that she is a pnuya. Once you've done that, then the question with the father becomes relevant. Our Gemara now has established that the machloket here revolves around the issue of chazaka, which is that when you find something in the present state, what does that mean about its previous state? So Rav says if you find it presently like this, that means that we assume that the previous state was similar. Whereas Shmuel says, whatever you find it now in this state, chazaka is prospective, but retroactively there's no meaning to what you found now. We assume that everything that you see happened right now when you found it. So that's the machloket that they're arguing about, is how do we view a chazaka once we have information. Now remember that in terms of chazakot in general, chazaka says that this is the general course, this is the general outcome that we would expect in these situations. If we find evidence to the contrary, then all of a sudden you have to worry about the chazakah. It doesn't mean that the chazakah rides over a contrary evidence. If there's contrary evidence, then you have to start to question the chazakah. Number two is, if we have the ability to check the chazakah, generally we will look and check the chazakah to ensure that it is that way, especially when it involves human intervention or human creation. In nature, we may not go back and check the chazakah because we assume that God's creation and nature follows those principles and in a sense is perfect. When man intervenes or when man's doing something or taking action, then we would not assume the chazakah if we can check it. So for instance, a good example of that is every morning when you put on your tzitzit, you're supposed to check whether your tzitzit are whole and the strings are all there. But why? When you used them yesterday, they were there. A chazakah is that the strings are still intact the next day. And so you should be able to make a bracha on the talit without having to check the tzitzit. The answer is that this is ma'ase adam. This is something that you create. It's something that you put on the talit. And therefore, there's something that can be undone or changed. Meaning that you didn't even realize that somebody stepped on your tzitzit the previous day. Something happened. So if you don't check the tzitzit, we prefer that you don't make a bracha unless you check to establish or reestablish the chazakah. Right, the Mishnah Berurah writes that you can check it the day before when you put it away in the bag. You can assume that if you put it away in the bag with the tzitzit there when you take it out in the morning, the tzitzit are still intact because there nothing touched it. But once you've worn them, the chazakah now has been opened to the possibility of being ruined. And if you can check, we're going to prefer that you check in those situations. The Achronim argue, that's the Bach and many others in that sugya, argue about where that line is. When do we say you should check a chazakah? When do we say you can just rely on a chazakah? This obviously comes up with glatt in kashrut, where there's a chazakah that the lungs do not have any tircha or lesions catches on them, yet we check them. So why is that? Is there a reyuta in the chazakah? It's not a strong chazakah. Or because we can check it, we do check it. So all of these items where you're invoking a chazakah and you can check, you always have to question whether it's better to check or it's better just to leave the chazakah the way it is. And then you have to come up with a differentiation, explains when we do check and when we don't check. One of those distinctions might be about things that deal with nature versus things that deal with ma'ase adam, which is what I explained to you just before. So now, Gemara says, Ushmuel, ma'ishna mi'mikveh. By Shmuel, what's the difference in the case of mikveh? So now we're going to all the classic cases of chazakah and shas, and the Gemara is going to ask, wait, let's look at this case. Look at this case. Do they look similar to our case or different than our case? Therefore, we're going to question the individuals. The truth is, as Tosfot says, this question's on Rav just as much as it is on Shmuel, except for Shmuel, it's much more difficult or much more obvious what the question is. Therefore, the Gemara posed it to Shmuel, but it would have been relevant to Rav as well, which is, Tetznan, we have a Mishnah. Mikveh shenimdad v'nimtza chaser. They measure the mikveh, and it doesn't have 40 sa'a in it. Kol tarot shenasu agabav l'mafreya, ben bishut yachid, ben bishut rabim, tmeot. Any tumah that was placed in this mikveh and was supposedly now tahor, we assume that that was not the case. Now, there's no safek here, because it would, if it was a safek, there would be a difference between the rishut yachid and rishut rabim. We know that safek tumah bishut yachid is tamei, safek tumah bishut rabim is tahor. What the Mishnah is pointing out is that it's irrelevant where it was, because we assume when you measure the mikveh and find it that it was missing, we assume that that was the state of the mikveh until that point in time, which is similar to what Rav suggested, which is, if I look at something and I find it now, I assume that retroactively that was the state of this item. So just like over here where he finds the girl is a bogeret, we assume that she was a bogeret prior to this point in time. So too, when you find the mikveh chaser, we assume the mikveh was chaser all along here until the pay point before where they checked it and it was full. And that's why these things are tmeil. That's why Tosfot points out he thinks it's a question on Rav as well, because Rav only says that she's a bogeret back to the morning. He doesn't say it goes back to the last time we checked. So over here, they are saying in the Mishnah that it goes back to the last time you checked and you got positive affirmation. Rav doesn't say it to go as far as saying that, and therefore he says it could be a question on Rav as well. Because there you can say, put the tamei in his chazakah. So you have a chazakah that the person that went into the mikveh was tamei, or the item that went into the mikveh was tamei beforehand, and now you want it to change its status. So now that the mikveh is questionable, the chazakah of the tumah comes forward. Ve'emar lo tavon. And the possibility that they didn't get a tvila. Where it says, Adarabo. Hamed mikve al chezkato, v'emer lo chaser. Why are you, there are two chazakot here. There's a chazaka that the item was tamei. There's a chazaka that the mikveh was built and was 40 sa'ah when it was built. And therefore it has a chazaka that it had the waters that were in there. Alright, so the Gemara says here, I have two chazakot that are weighing against each other. And the truth of the matter is that the Gemara's question is a little strange because why would you say adarabah? Hamed mikveh al chezkato. I have two choices here. I have a chazaka of tumah, which the item was tamei. I have a chazaka of the mikveh that it was whole. So now I have chazaka versus chazaka. What's your choice? You would always go the chumrah. So the Gemara's question, I'm saying, adarabah doesn't make so much sense because that's going the kula and saying, the mikveh is good. Because if you had this choice, you would go the chumrah. The Tosafot Yishanim over here says that it's a chumrah mevi lidei kula. It's not a perfect chumrah here because if we assume that things are tamei, then people are going to be soreif, truma, soreif kodashim. So it turns out that it's a chumrah that brings to a kula that allows you to burn kodshim and burn truma now. And if it wasn't tamei and it's a safek, you can't do that. So it's not so clear that we have just this side's a chumrah, this side's a kula. There it's tadim in both sides. So Gemara says, no, harei chaser lefanecha. The problem is that the mikveh right now is chaser, and that's a deficit here in the case of mikveh. It says, achanami harei bogeret lefanecha. You can say the same thing by the case of the bogeret, that right now we see that she is a bogeret. Just like you see the mikveh is missing, so do we see the bogeret. If you're going to say that the mikveh retroactively was chaser all that time, you should also assume that she was a bogeret from prior to this time. Mar says, hashtahu the bagra. She became a bogeret right now. That's not something that happened previously. So Mar says, atam nami, why can't you say the same thing by the mikveh? Hashtahu the chaser. Only now did the deficit appear in the mikveh. Until that point in time, it was full. Mar says, you can't say that. Hotam tarte the riuta. Hochachad the riuta. But in the case of the mikveh, you have two deficits in the chazoko. Whereas over here, by the Bogeret, you only have one deficit in the Chazaka. By the case of the Mikveh, I have, Tarte the Riuta, I have two deficits here. Because we're looking at the individual who went to the Mikveh, we're looking at the object that went into the Mikveh. That object, that individual was Tamei, for sure. We know that they were certainly Tamei. We also know that we're looking at Mikveh right now that is Chaser in front of me. That is missing. So I have those two items facing the one item that at one point this Mikveh was Kasher. So in that case, these two deficits are going to trump, because the Safek leans much more heavily to say that this person should be Tamei than be Tahor, and therefore Shmuel is going to agree in this case that the individual is or remains Tamei. On the other hand, in the case here by the Bogeret, I have the fact that she is a Bogeret now, she's sitting in front of me, and she has the status of Bogeret, but I also have the fact that until this point she was a Ne'ara. So I have one Chazaka against another Chazaka. In a sense, it's a stalemate. In that case, Shmuel says, then you're only going to look at the chazaka from the moment that we find it. That point prospectively, that chazaka kicks in. But I can't go say that the mafreya, it was meaningful because the previous chazaka is just as strong as the chazaka that I have now. Shmuel, maishna mi chavit. What about the case of chavit? The Tanya, we have a tosefta in Trumot. Haya budeket chavit la frisha lea truma. He kept checking his chavit because he wanted to be mafish truma. He basically set aside one barrel of wine. And he says, anytime I need to take off truma, this barrel is going to be where I take off the truma from. So every time he has 100 lug and he wants to take off, he says, the 2 lug of truma are in that barrel. And he knows that that barrel has, you know, a certain number of lug in it. So he can keep going and doing this until he uses up all of the wine in that barrel. Or the whole, right. In essence, the whole barrel then becomes truma and he can give it to the kohen. So therefore, so here's your answer. He was checking and checking, and then one day he shows up, and it's vinegar. So now the problem is, when did it transition from being wine to vinegar? Rashi says it's meaningful because you can't be mafrish from chometz on yain and yain on chometz. They're shnei minim. And the din by truma is that you can only take mimino. You can only take from the same item. So here, if it's chometz, it's not good truma for the wine. Or if it was wine, it's not good for chometz. Either way, it's not good. So that's the deficit over here. The Ritva, on the other hand, brings that the deficit over here is that it's a hafrasha b'taut. Because he thought he was being mafrish yayin. Turns out that it's really chometz. So the problem is not the fact that it's shnei minim. It's simply the fact that he has a mistaken assumption that he's taking off truma from yayin. And turns out that's not what he's doing. And therefore, there's truma b'taut. So now, kol gimel yamim, all 3 days, vadai. And it's for sure that way. Mikan ve'elech safek. From then onwards, it is a safek. Now, Rashi and Tosafot eliminate the word rishonim over here. There were gersot that said, kol gimel yamim rishonim. The first 3 days. The reason they eliminated it is because in the Gemara Nida, it's a machloket amuraim as to what these 3 days mean. It says for 3 days it's for sure, and then it's a safek. What are the 3 days here? So the amuraim and Nida argue about that fact, and they say, one of them says that it means that when you find it as chometz, that means for the 3 days prior to that, it for sure was chometz. Prior to that point in time, we don't know. That is because vinegar is not an instantaneous process. It's something that happens over a period of time. So if you find something that is currently vinegar, it just didn't become vinegar yesterday or 5 minutes ago. It definitely became vinegar a couple of days ago because of the process of the fermenting of the wine into vinegar is a process. So therefore he says, if you find it now as vinegar, for sure, for 3 days it's been vinegar. Before that point in time, I can't say anything about it because of that process. But I know for sure that if I find today it's vinegar, 3 days ago it was vinegar. That's one amora. The other amora looks at the other way and says, for 3 days, the last time you checked that it was wine, you can know for sure it was wine for that subsequent 3 days because it doesn't turn into vinegar instantly. So if you saw that it was wine then, for 3 days you're sure that it was still wine. After that point, it becomes a safek. That's the machloket amoraim over there as to which 3 days we think are vadai. The last check of the wine or the check now of the vinegar. Generally, when it comes to truma, there's a requirement of mukaf, that you have to take off your truma from something that is adjacent, something that is present here. So how do you get around that problem? He's being mafrish the truma in a barrel that he doesn't see what's inside of it. The possibility is that it is here, it is present, but he's just not going into the barrel to check it each time. The barrel can be sitting right there next to him. He just doesn't open it up every time to check inside of it. So I think that's one way to get around the problem of mukaf. The other way to get around it is say bidiyavad. In that bidiyavad, everybody agrees if you do it shalom in a mukaf, that it still works. So then we have a steer here between the Braita and the Mishnah. We have the Braita by Chavit and the Mishnah over here. Maishna da'ocha vadai, maishna da'ocha safek. So maishna da'ocha vadai. How come by the case of mikveh, you don't have any questions that when we find it as being missing, that we assume it was missing all the way back to the last time we knew it was full, and we don't give any window in which we say the chazokah of it being kasher stands. So we're treating the gates of mikveh as vadai, because if it was a sefek tumah, it would make a difference as to whether it was b'shuta rabim or b'shuta yachid. On the other hand, by the case of the yayin, you're treating it like a sefek. And by the case of the chavid, you have 3 days where you're certain about it standing, and then you're saying it's a sefek. You're not saying that it's vadai missing or vadai chometz. You're not saying it's vadai chometz or vadai yayin in that other period of time. You're saying that it's a safek. So why is the case of chavit a safek? In the case of mikveh, a vadai. Rav Chanina Misuria, mantana chavit. Who's the author of that position by the chavit? Rabbi Shimoni. The gabi mikveh nami sfeka mishave. Because he also thinks by mikveh, it is a safek. The Tanya. Kol tarot shenasu al gabav lemafreya. Ben birshuta yachid, ben birshuta rabim tmeot. That's the Mishnah that we quoted. Rabbi Shimon Omer, birshuta rabim teorot, whereas birshuta yachid, tolin. So when it's birshuta rabim, we say that it is teor, birshuta yachid, we say that we are toleh. Now that's interesting because he's invoking the principle here, which is, safek birshuta rabim is tahor, safek tuma birshuta yachid is tameh. So therefore he says that if I have a safek birshuta rabim, the mikveh is in the birshuta rabim, then I say I have a safek tuma b'rishut rabim, and I say it goes the kula. On the other hand, when I say safek tuma b'rishut yachid, the mikveh is found in b'rishut yachid, then we are tolin. Tolin means that it's a safek. It's not a full-fledged tuma. If you believe that safek tuma b'rishut yachid is tamei, then it should be just tamei. Why does he say that it's tolin? So Rashi explains to us over here, because all safek tuma we learn from sota. And by the sota, he says the yesh raglayim ledavar. By the sota, it's not simply that we have a safek tuma b'rishuta yachid. We also have circumstantial evidence that there's a problem here. You had yichud, you had a warning, you have all these other things that push you in the direction of saying that the safek tuma b'rishuta yachid is tameh. Over here, you're dealing with just pure safek. There's no other circumstantial evidence. And because of that, he says tolin. We don't just say that it's definitively tameh. We say that it's toleh, and therefore you'd have to wait until we know for sure it's tameh in order to burn it, or you have to wait until it rots and goes bad and you can't burn it because you're not allowed to burn truma tmeyah unless it really is truma tmeyah, and the same with kodashim. So that's why he makes it into tolim. Avala Rabbanan, tevel lemafreya. So the Gemara says, but according to the Rabbanan, then you would assume that it is tevel lemafreya. Gemara says, shani hotam, teika lemeymar ha-meid tevel al-chezkato, v'imar lo nitkin. So let's say there that the Tevel was Tevel, and the Chazaka is that the Tevel remains Tevel. So Adraba, Hemed Yain al Cheskoto, Beimar lo Chechmitz. So let's say the same thing by the wine and say that the wine was wine and it didn't go turn into vinegar. It says, Hari Hechmitz lefanecha. Do you have the chometz that's sitting in front of you? So they can't just say that it was wine. Hachanami, Hari Bogeret lefanenu. In our case too. Why don't you make the same statement that you have the Bogeret standing in front of you? It says, Hashtu de Bagro. Because it happened now. That's when she turned into Bogeret. So Achanami Ashtohu de Echmitz, or Hotam Nami Ashtohu de Echmitz. Why don't you say the same thing by the barrel, that the Chometz happened now? Hotam Tarte de Riuta, Ochachada de Riuta. So again here, you have this balance between the number of problems or deficits that we have. So over here, we have Tarte de Riuta. Over there, Ochachada de Riuta Hudeika. Over there, we only have one deficit. By Bogeret, again, the one deficit is you have a Cheskat Narut and a Cheskat Bogeret. We check now, and she's a Bogeret. That's the only deficit you have here. By the case of the vinegar, I have tarte de riuto. That is, number one, I have vinegar sitting in front of me right now. Number two is the object was tevel. So it's similar to the case of mikveh. In the case of mikveh, I say I have a tamei, and I have a mikveh chaser in front of me. So I have two deficits. Therefore, I'm going to assume that they are tamei. That's the rabbanon shita. So too, by the case of echmitz, I'm going to say the same thing. That I have in front of me chometz. I have tevel, which is vaday tevel. So now I'm going to lean. I have two deficits. Then the chazaka of the fact that it was once wine is not going to help me anymore. And therefore I have tevel over here. So therefore the rabbanon are consistent in their shita with regards to chavit and mikveh. Because both of those cases are tarte liriuta. They both have double deficits. And that means that mafreya it is tevel. You have to be mafrish chuma again. And the same thing by the mikveh. We're going to assume everything was tameh. The other hand, for Rabbi Shimon, by the case of chavit, I have a safek. And I have to be mafrish another time. By the case of mikveh, then I have not a vaday tamei, I also have a safek. For the chachamim, we say by the case of mikveh, he's tamei. And he has to go back to the mikveh. That's it. That's the decision. For Rabbi Shimon, it's a safek by the mikveh. So by the mikveh where it's a safek, I have to differentiate with whether it's reshut rabim or reshut yachid. And then that's parallel in the case of chavit. By the case of chavit, it's a safek. Chuma. We're not going to say he has to vaday take off chuma. He has to deal with the chuma here again, and he's going to have a safek that he's going to have to deal with, which means that he has to be mafrish again, but he also has to be careful with the chuma that he took off, and therefore he's going to have to deal with that balance of the safek. For the chachamim, in both instances, we say that he's vaday tamei, he's got to go to the mikveh again, and this is vaday tevel, and he's got to be mafrish chuma again. So that's the difference between the opinion. Chachamim say that in both cases, we for sure say that nothing happened because of the deficit of the two deficits. For Rabbi Shimon, it's a safek in both cases. So by the safek by tuma, you end up with the principle of safek tuma b'shut rabim tahor, safek tuma b'shut yachid is tameh. And by tevel, you have a safek tevel, and you have to deal with the safek tevel. By our case of Bulgaria, Shmuel says, neither of those cases are similar to the case of Bulgaria, because the case of Bulgaria is one chazaka against another chazaka, and you don't have tarte liriuta. And that's why he says that it's only prospectively that she's considered to be a Bulgaret. The Mara says, Neima kitanae. Let us say this machloket between Rav and Shmuel is really a machloket tanaim. Mi mutzi miyad mi. Who can take from the other party? The case here is a case in Baba Batra, in which a Shechiv Meirah gave a gift to people. We know that a Shechiv Meirah gifts all of his property, leaves nothing over. Then if he gets up and he's healthy and he survives his deathbed, then all of that is retracted and the gifts are not gifts because it's clear, or there's an automatic tnai built into the matnat Shechiv Meirah, that if I get up, if I survive, then I'm not giving this away. The only reason I gave it away is because I thought I was going to die. So here's the case. The guy gets up, and now we have counterclaims. He says, I was a Shechiv Meirah when I gifted it, and now I'm healthy. I want my money back. The other guys say, no, he was healthy when he gifted it to us. And a Bari who gives away his property, that's a full-fledged gift. He doesn't have that out to say, oh, well, I'm going to renege on the gift, because there was no reason to believe that the gift wasn't a good gift because he was healthy at the time. So now he comes with the claim, I was a Shechiv Meirah. They come with the claim that he was a Bari. Brayta says, Mi motzi miyad mi, hu mitzi miyadam. He takes away from them below raya, without any proof. Behein ein motzi miyado below raya. And they can't take it from him without any proof. Meaning that the burden of proof is on the other individuals. Divrei Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov says that the gifter has the stronger hand here, or the upper hand here, and therefore it goes to him automatically. If they want to get this, they've got to bring proof or evidence to the contrary. And that is because, and we're seeing in a second, The chazaka is that it was his property. Before this safek arose, the money belonged to him. The question only becomes, or a safek only arises, once they gifted it. So the gifting itself is what generates the problem. And that gifting, they need to bring proof to the fact that it was a bari and not a shchiv meira. Tosafot points out here that it's a little strange the way that it's structured. He says, "Hu motzi mi adam b'lo raya." He can take it from them without any proof. And then it says, well, if they want to take it, they need a proof. Isn't that automatically the case? I mean, that if he can take it without a proof, of course they have to bring proof to take it. So Tosafot says, no, you might have thought here, the fact that he can take it without a proof is so strong that even if they bring a proof, it won't mean anything. The chazakah is strong enough that it's his, that even if they bring evidence to the contrary, it would still stay with him. So that's what the statement of Rabbi Yaakov is saying, is that if they do come with proof, then we do give it to them. And that is strong enough to undermine the chazakah that it was his property. On the other hand, Rabbi Nathan Omer, imbarihu, alav lavi raya. If he's walking around like a healthy guy right now, he's got to bring proof, shayash chimera, that he was on his deathbed prior to this point in time. Vim shchiv meira, who, if he's still laying on his bed and he's ill, aleim lavi raya shabari aya. They gotta bring proof that he was healthy. So this seemingly is the same machloket. Leima Rav, damak Rabbi Natan. Let us say Rav is like Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Natan says, whatever state you're in now, we assume that was your state prior to now. So just like Rav says, when you find her a bogeret, we assume she was a bogeret beforehand. So too Rabbi Natan says, you find him a bari, he was a bari. You find him a shchiv meira, he was a shchiv meira. Shmuel the Mark Rabbi Yaakov, and Shmuel says, no, when you find him now, that's the status now that has no bearing on what happened beforehand. And so too, Shmuel says, you find a bogeret, that's prospective, that has no retroactive meaning. And Rabbi Yaakov says the same thing. We go by the current state. The current state is that we have a safek here, and what he looks like now has no bearing on what he was 5 minutes ago or what he was when he gifted the property. So Amar lecha Rav, Anadam Reyafilu Rabbi Yaakov. Rav says, I can fit it even according to Rabbi Yaakov. Ad kan lo kamer Rabbi Yaakov hatam de'ikala meimar hameid mamon al cheskato. Now Rabbi Yaakov over there says that you have a chazaka that hameid mamon al cheskato is because the mamon belonged to this guy before it was gifted. So there you have a chazaka in his favor. V'hacha mi neima hameid guf al cheskato. Over here you can't say hameid guf al cheskato. And that's because of the nature of the safek here is it happens on the last day of the 6 months. On the last day of the 6 months, there is no chazaka. You have equal chance that she's a nara or a bogeret on that day. So therefore, what Rav says is, look, if I find her now as a bogeret, and beforehand I have no chazaka, then let us assume that it moves retroactively to the beginning of the day. On the other hand, for the case of mamon, that's not true. Until the point of gifting, we are certain that it belonged to this guy, and that he had the ownership over it. The only safek arose is once he gifted it. So in terms of the Chezkat Mamon, he has the Chezkat Mamon until the Safek arose. And that's clear. And so therefore, maybe that's why Rabbi Yaakov over there says that that Chazaka is strong enough to say, we don't say whatever we see now is true retroactively. Shmuel Amar Ana Amreya Filuk Rabbi Natan. Shmuel says, I can even fit into Rabbi Natan Shita. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Natan Atam de Kuliyama b'Chezkat Briim Kaimei. Because the default status of human beings is that they are healthy. That is the default. Most people are healthy. Most people are walking around and fine. They're not laying on their deathbeds. If you want to change that status quo, you need to bring proof to the contrary. So over here, even though the chazakat mamon is in his favor, nevertheless, the chazak of health is against him. So if he's walking around healthy now, then the assumption is that he was healthy beforehand because most people who were healthy. So here you have a combination of a rov and a chazaka. So the rov together with the chazaka are going to lend more credence to the fact that he probably was healthy until this point in time. And because of that, he's got to bring proof to the contrary. So over here, when she becomes a bogeret, she's not undermining or changing any chazaka that is in front of us or that was prior to this point in time, because until this point in time, she was a Nara. But then on this day, we have no status. So since she has no status on this day, we're just going to assume that whenever she changed, she changed. There's no reason to believe that prior to this point in time, she was a Bulgaret, because there's nothing that is bolstering that view that whatever we see now was true beforehand. By the case of Bari, he's healthy today, plus you have the role people are healthy, so that bolsters the fact that he probably was healthy or he was a bari before this time. This girl who turns into a Bogeret today, there's no reason to believe that she was a Bogeret 5 minutes ago or 2 days ago because she was a Nara until that point in time. And truthfully, the Chazaka is the opposite, which is that it's in favor of her being a Nara, not a Bogeret. So she had a Chezkat Narut until this point in time. Plus, this day is a Safek. Since this day is a Safek, we can assume just as much she's a Nara as she is a Bogeret. And just because we find her as a Bogeret now doesn't mean that she was a Bogeret prior to that moment. All right, so now the Gemara says, all right, let us try another machloket. Name Akani Tanai. Let us say it's like this machloket Tanaim, which is a braita that is similar to the machloket Amoraim that is here by Rabbi Shmuel. Kitcha via bederech v'kitcha atzma bayir harehi bogeret. So there we go, one statement. Tana chada harehi bogeret lefaneinu, v'taniidach chashinan l'kedushei shneihem. So you have one braita that says harehi bogeret lefaneinu, which is Rav's position. You have another braita that says Chayshin l'kedushei shneihem, which is Shmuel's position. So seemingly here, you have machloket braitot that looks identical to the machloket Rav and Shmuel. My love, chad k'rav, chad k'shmuel. That would be very simple. Just say one braita is like Rav, one braita is like Shmuel. Lo, idi v'idi k'shmuel. Both braitot are like Shmuel. Kan b'makach hashato, kan b'she'in makach hashato. Depends on whether the daughter is disagreeing with the father's assessment. The difference will be, in the case where she doesn't argue with the father, then it's a safek, and we are choshesh for both of them, choshesh nishneem. In the case where she is machish the father, and she says, no, I was a bogeret prior to this point in time, over there we say, arei bogeret lefaneinu. As Rashi says over here, Rashi is very controversial, we'll see that in the Tosfot in a second, he says, v'adik tani arei bogeret lefaneinu, I was already a Bogeret yesterday. Now that's very difficult because we just said the whole case here is when it happens on the last day of the 6 months. So how is she possibly, can she say that I was a Bogeret yesterday? Now maybe Rashi the Shitato, who thinks that you can become a Bogeret prior to 6 months, that might work. But for the Rishonim, especially like Tosafot, who believe that you can't be a Bogeret prior to the 6 months, how can you say etmo? So Tosafot writes over here that we're talking about the day when the 6th month happened. And therefore, it wouldn't be yesterday that she was a Bogeret. It would have been this morning that she was a Bogeret. But that's what she's arguing about and saying that I was a Bogeret prior to this point in time. So now we have something that bolsters the Chazaka. The fact that she's a Bogeret now is not enough by itself to say that she was a Bogeret prior to this point in time. But if we have her corroborating and saying, listen, I was a Bogeret before this point in time, then the Chazaka, together with her statement, make it that she gets that Chazaka from an earlier point in time, and therefore, father's doing is meaningless in this case, and therefore she's only married to the man that she accepted from, because she is Ne'amanet with regards to her Simanim, together with the Chazaka that we find that she is a Bogeret currently. So now the Gemara says, well, if you're able to resolve the machloket in the braitot, you can resolve the machloket amarim in the same manner, which is, just like you just said now, that Shmuel basically can agree to Rav's position when the girl is denying the father's statement and saying that she was a bogeret before this point in time, then let's say that Rav's position is exactly that case. Rav's position is b'makach hashato. Shmuel's position is a case where she does not disagree with her father. It doesn't say that I was a Bogeret prior to this point in time. So if you do that, just like you were able to reconcile the braitot, you can now reconcile between Rav and Shmuel and say they're speaking about different cases. My says, v'tizbra, can you really say that? Va, Rav Yosef, bray the Rav Nasha midvil. So this Amora, who is a Talmud Muvhak of Rav, Avad Uvda Kavete de Rav, of course, he paskin alocha like Rav, v'ikpid Shmuel. Shmuel was makpid, and we see that by Rav's Talmidim. Many of Rav's Talmidim used to, or joined Shmuel's Beit Midrash, or they got into disagreements with Shmuel, because Shmuel was of differing opinion. So over here, this Rav Yosef Breit Rav Nasha Midvil, Paskin, according to Rav, which says that, Harihi Bogeret Lefaneinu, and Harihi Bogeret Lefaneinu means that it dismisses the father's Kiddushin and accepts the daughter's Kiddushin. So he says, and this is what Shmuel says, everybody else assumes that they were assigned a small portion of Chochmah. And since they only have a small portion of Chochmah, they defer to my authority. This Amora thinks that he got an extra big portion of Chochmah, and therefore he doesn't have to defer to my authority. And therefore he paskins against me. So that this guy thinks that he's big enough to paskin against me. But why would Shmuel say that? If you think Rav and Shmuel don't argue, am I kako makpid? What is he being makpid on? Now, whether the remaining part of the Gemara is here or not is subject to machloket in Tosafot. And even in Tosafot, there's a machloket in the Girsa as to what Tosafot had. There's an alternate Girsa in Tosafot as well. We'll read what's in the Gemara, which is Dilma, ki avad uvda b'makach hashato. Maybe the case here was a case where she argues and says I was a boger from prior to that point in time. And Shmuel agrees in that case. So now, if you say Shmuel agrees in that case, then why is it that he's getting mad at the Talmud of Rav for paskin that way? He might agree with that situation, or he doesn't disagree with Rav. Why would Shmuel be makpid or angry at him for undermining his authority if he paskins that way anyway? Dilma ki avid uvda machasato. That the case was a case where she was machish, her father. I mean, that she said she was a bogeret from the morning. And maybe over there, even Shmuel agrees that we say, harei bogeret lefaneinu. Ella, it must be that the case is a case, shelo b'machashato, when there was no argument. And yet, we see that Rav and Shmuel still disagree. Or that Rav Yosef bar Menashia passing like Rav, which doesn't turn out to be like the shita of Shmuel. Tosfot has the alternate girsia here, which is Dilma ki avid uvda b'shalom kachashato. That was a case where she didn't disagree, or she did not say that she was a boger prior to this time. And that's why Shmuel was angry, because he paskin like Rav, but Rav doesn't hold like that, because Rav holds like Shmuel. And therefore, Rav Yosef ben Asher was paskin neither like Rav nor like Shmuel, because Rav agrees to Shmuel in that case. In that instance, the Dilma would be a rejection of the previous statement, which says that if he wasn't arguing, then why was he makpid? Now the girls are explaining. He was makpid because Rabbi Yosef ben Asher didn't follow even the position of Rav. And therefore, you can't prove anything from the fact that Shmuel was makpid. Maybe Shmuel's makpid because Rabbi Yosef ben Asher actually took up the position of Rav in the wrong place. And maybe they could still agree. Tosfot rejects that girsa because he says that the Gemara sounds like that Rav Yosef ben Asher was following the position of Rav. Not saying that he didn't follow anybody's position. Sounds like he at least had the position of Rav. And therefore there are those that eliminate the girsa of Dilma completely and say, Amai koka bakpit. If they really agree, Rav and Shmuel, then there's no reason for Shmuel to get upset. Because if it was a case of Machachashato, then the halacha is like Shmuel, and Rabbi Yosef ben Asher wouldn't have passed in that way. If it was a case where she didn't say anything, then the halacha is like Rav, and Shmuel wouldn't have been upset about it. There's no reason for Shmuel to get upset if they agree in both cases. The only reason for Shmuel to get upset is if they disagree. And therefore, this addition of Dilma, ki avad uvda machashato, is unnecessary or superfluous. And that's why the Tosafot, the Marsha, and others take out the girsa of Dilma over here. So therefore, either we say that Rav argues even in the case of Ein Makashato, and that's what's meant over here by the Lashon of the Gemara, or we say that Shmuel argues even by Makashato, and that's why he's upset about the Psak of Rav's Talmud, or you say that Rav's Talmud didn't check. He didn't check at all, whether there was a denial or not. He passed him like Rav without ever checking. Well, if you think that there's a difference between denial or not denial, how could he pass him the Lacha without checking? So in any of those instances, what it proves to you is that Rav and Shmuel argue. And that Rav and Shmuel are definitely not in agreement, because otherwise there's no reason for Shmuel to get upset over here. For whatever those reasons are, it shows you that there is a machloket Rav and Shmuel here, irrespective of whether makachashato or not makachashato. So now the Gemara says, Amar leimar of Zutra the Ravashi, hocha amar ameimar hilchotok avati di Shmuel. The locha is like Shmuel. Ravashi amar, Ravashi himself says hilchotok avati di Rav. Talach is like Rav. Gemara paskins hilchotok kavati de Rav. Talach is like Rav. Tosafot raises the issue right away. Why do I need the Gemara? We know the principle is that by dinei mamonino talach ke Shmuel, dinei isurei talach ke Rav. So over here it's dinei isurei, it should be talach ke Rav. Why does the Gemara have to come and paskin hilchotok kavati de Rav? The answer is because, first of all, we have an Amora that says otherwise. We have a Meimar coming along and saying hilchotok kavati de Shmuel. That's number one. Number two is, Shmuel is able to deal with all the brightot here. Shmuel is able to deal with the brighta in Bava Batra. He's able to deal with the brighta here about Kidsha and reconcile according to his opinion. Rav has to say it's a machloket Tanaim in all these cases. Therefore, Shmuel might be a better position in this case, and that's why the Gemara has to come and say, despite that fact, Alocha is Kirav in this instance. Okay, next Mishnah. Mishi Atzal Huvi Shto Medinat Hayam. He and his wife traveled overseas. Ubahu v'ishto banav. He comes back with his wife, his children, v'amar. Isha shiatzat imi l'midinat hayam arizo. This is the woman that I married beforehand, and I'm still married to her. Ve'elu banav. And these are her children. Ein tzarich lavi raya, lo ala isha, v'lo ala banim. He doesn't have to bring a proof about the woman that it's his wife, about her yichus, and he doesn't have to bring any proof that these are her children. Meaning that all the chazakot stand in place. Rashi claims the reason that you don't have to check about her yichus is because he married her before they left. And if he married her here, we definitely checked out her yichus before they got married. So therefore, the yichus was already checked. And if this is the same wife that he comes back with, there's no reason to check her yichus again. So therefore, we assume that the fact that he left with this wife, he comes back with the woman, says it's the same wife, she has children. All of these things make sense. They're chazokot that seem to corroborate what he's saying. And therefore, he doesn't need to bring any evidence as to the yichus of the woman or as to the yichus of the children. Now, that's the way Rashi says. If you look, Tosfos Riyah Zakein says that, V'lo al isha she'im yuchaset, perish Rashi, shekvar badhua oto shniseit. According to the way Rashi is explaining it, and the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Meir, who says that you need to check the yichus of a woman when she's married and her families are not bechezkat kashrut. So therefore, Rashi's explanation means that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, and that's not crazy, because so far the Gemara has already established that two of the Mishnayot in the Perek are Shita and Rabbi Meir, and the Chachamim disagree. So that this Mishnah is also Rabbi Meir is not far-fetched. And therefore Rashi says, the reason you don't have to make a check, even though it's Rabbi Meir, is because we checked her before she left. On the other hand, the Tosfos Riyah Zakein says, Velohi, Tafilu kol mishpichot b'chazkat kashrut omeret, k'damri rabbanon. Zot ha'isha sh'nasa ke'an, sh'yadanu b'mishpachta u'b'chazkat kashrut omeret, u'k'sh'nasa isha b'mininat adam, enanu yodim mishpachta. That there's a key difference here, that if this is a woman that he married here, we know who her family is. And therefore, every family has a chesed kashrut as long as we know the family. Because if we know the family, and we know there's no problem with the family, they have a chesed kashrut, you don't have to do any checks on this woman. On the other hand, when you go overseas and he takes a wife, which we'll see in a second, there we don't know the family. So you can't make an assumption that her family has a chesed kashrut, because we don't know who the family is at all. So as opposed to Rashi, who says that the reasoning over here has to do with Rabbi Meir's Shita, and she was checked beforehand, he says, no, even according to the Rabbanan, this Mishnah would be exactly like this. But the reason that we don't have to check over here is because the woman has a chazkat kashrut. She's from a family that we know that is local, and therefore you don't have to check her out because she has a chazkat kashrut. So Tosfos over here says, what's the question? If she got married when they left here, and then they went overseas, then why does he have to bring any raya about the isha? And if the children are hanging on to the woman, why do you need any proof that she is their mother? Then what's the Mishnah teaching you? What chiddush is there here in the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, you don't have to tell us about the mother, you don't have to tell us about the kids. What is the havamina that there's something else here? You have a mother who left with him, and we already checked her out. And you have kids that are hanging on to her, and everybody says that these are her kids. So why do we need any evidence? So it says, L'chein perishri, ain't tzarich lavi raya l'banim she'ain shelo. That the real chiddush in the Mishnah is not that this woman is ksheira, and that these children belong to her. But the real raya is, the question is he the father of these children? That's the only thing we don't know. Meaning that he claims that this is his wife, these are his children, and we have the wife, who we checked out already, she's miuchaset. The children are hanging on to her, so clearly they're her children. The only question we might have is he the father of these children? So the Ri says that's the chiddush of the first line in the Mishnah, that if he goes overseas, he doesn't bring a raya, that it's his wife, and that these are his children, and we assume that they are a family unit, and therefore the children are his children, and the woman is the miuchaset. And therefore all the children are fine. Now the next line in the Mishnah is, Meita, if she passed away, Ve'elu Baneha, he says the wife that I was married to, she passed away, but these are her children. Mevi Raya La Banim. Ve'enu Mevi Raya La Isha. He doesn't have to bring any proof about the marriage or about the woman, because the assumption is that that was his wife, and he left with a wife, and he doesn't have any new wife now. The assumption is that that was his wife, so we're good with that. The only thing now he has to prove is that these children belong to that woman. That these children were born to that woman. If he can connect these children to that woman, then he's taking care of all the problems of Yichus, and we know that these children are fine children. So then he says, Isha nasati b'medina tayam. He says, I got married when I was overseas. Hari huzo, this is the wife I married overseas. Ve'elu banah, and these are her children. Mevi raya l'isha, ve'en tzarich lavi raya l'banim. He has to bring a proof to the yichus of the woman, but not to the yichus of the children. We're going to see in the Gemara, he's going to qualify this. Rashi already says in the Mishnah, it's been a chance with banei kruchim achareah. The children hang on to her like she's their mother. The children act like children to a particular mother would act, which is that they hang on to her, they're very close with her. So therefore, we don't need evidence of the fact that these are her children. What we need evidence of is this woman a miuchaset. So for Rashi, that means that since she wasn't married when she was here, we never did the checks. So we need you to bring the checks or proofs of the checks. According to the Tosfot Riyazakein, we need you to show to us that her mishpacha or who her mishpacha is, because then she'll have a chesked kashrut, and that'll be fine. But you need to be proof to who her family is. We don't know who her family is at all. So as soon as you give us evidence of her family, then we'll have a chesked kashrut. So therefore, then she'll be okay. If she's okay, the children are automatically okay. Ve'meita ve'elu banah. The case here is that he married overseas, and then he says, Meito, the woman I married overseas passed away, and these are her children. So now, he has to prove, first of all, who is the woman that he was married to overseas. Number two, he has to prove that who these children are belonging to that woman, because the woman's not here anymore, they don't have a mother in front of us. So now he has to bring two points of evidence. One is whether the woman was Ksheira. Number two, that these children belong to that woman. So now, Amar Rabbi Ravuna, Bekulan, Bekuchim Achareah. The cases here where you don't have to bring a rayot about the kids is the assumption that the kids are hanging on to the mother. When they're hanging on to the mother, there's a chazalka that these kids belong to that woman. As long as you can bring evidence to the fact that this woman is a ksheira or miyuchaset, then the children are assumed to be her children. Now, Tanrabanan. Isha nasati b'medina tayam. I married a woman overseas. Mevi rayala isha. Bein zarech labi rayala banim. He has to bring a proof about the woman, but he has to bring a proof about the children. That's only true of the youngsters who are kruchim acharel. The gdolim that don't act that way, then you need separate proof for the children that they belong to this woman because they're not acting like these children. When is that true? Bishachat. That's only when there's one woman involved. But if there are two women involved here, he's got to bring a raya on the woman, on the children, on the gdolim, and the knanim. So now Rashi explains the case here about Isha Chat versus Shtei Nashim. It's a case where Isha Chat is that he went overseas, married a woman, and now he comes back with the children. So when he comes back with the children and the woman, if he can prove the yichus of the woman, the younger children that are karuch achareah, they follow her, and they're all miuchasim. The gdolim, which don't, you have to bring separate evidence that they are her children. The problem here is when he comes back with two wives. Aval shtei nashim nasati umeita achat. One of them died. So he says, I married two women, one of them died, and now I'm back here with these children, and the children are karuch acharei, the woman that is here. So now he has to bring evidence to both women that they are miuchasot. The reason being, according to Rashi, is "Vafilu kuchim acharea the shema banei shel chavrata yu v'gadlatan." Because the fear here is what you were saying, Fred, which is that if she brought them up, then they're karuch acharea, not because she was their mother, but because she was their foster mother. And since she acted as their foster mother, there's no longer any proof that these children really are her children. So therefore, he's got to bring evidence to both mothers or both women that they are miuchasot. And then he's got to bring evidence that the children belong to whichever one of the two mothers. So it's not enough now that simply that they're attached to this woman. And he proves that this woman is miuchaset because the other woman might have been also the mother of these children. The reason they're hanging on to this woman is because she brought them up. So for that reason, he's got to bring evidence to both mothers that they were miuchasot, or he's got to bring proof to which the children belong to. Whether they belong to this mother that's alive or to the one who passed away. But he's got to bring evidence to that fact. The Rambam, on the other hand, says, "Varam perish afilu shtem kayamot." Even if both women are alive, vevi rayal achat v'abanim karuchim acharam, and he brings proof to one of the women, and the children are hanging on to her. Tzarich lavi raya al bana shelu banim shelzo. He has to bring proof that these are her children. Vevi rayal leah shim yuchaset v'abanim shem shela v'afilu aktanim shikruchim acharam. Even these children are hanging on to her. So according to the Rambam, both women are still alive. Right, so both women are still alive, and he's got to bring proof, number one, that these women are miuchasot, and number two is he's got to bring proof that the children belong to a particular mother. Because even if the children are following one of the mothers, we no longer have default is that he has one wife and these are the children, so if they're hanging on to her, we're going to assume that she's the mother of these children. We don't say that, and we say that since there are two mothers here, and there are children here, we're not clear on all that's happened. And therefore, you got to bring evidence to the fact that, number one, these two women are good, and know who the children belong to. But then for Rashi, if you have both women here and the kids are hanging on to one woman, that's good evidence that that's the mother. Otherwise, they wouldn't run away from the other woman if their biological mother was there. So therefore, the only case this can be true is where that mother passed away, the one of the women passed away. Then even though they're attached to the other woman, that's not evidence that she's their mother, biological mother. It could be that she is their foster mother. So therefore, Rashi says it's a case where one of the women passed away. The Rambam says it's a case where both of the women are alive. So we're going to stop here by the last line on Ayin Tet, Amud Bet.